Oh, so this already makes me feel better. So I know what to do. So, okay, authors. Right. So, this work was done with two of our postdocs, fantastic postdocs. So there is John Cherry, whom everybody knows as JJ. So he comes from George Fuller's group at UCSD. He is now with us at LAML. He is on the market. Whatever mistakes I make here have nothing to do with you. He's great, you should find him. So then there is Ian Shoemaker, who is the second brilliant postdoc on this. And so he comes from another UC campus. He was a student of Alex before he came to us. And he is now at CP3 in Denmark. He is also on the market, so hire him. And yours truly.
Hire him.
Is he on the market too?
I'm on the market too. I don't know. You tell me.
Everyone has their price.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, so I think this will solve all my problems. Okay, so if you want to see these guys, they are here. So you get to Los Alamos, you get an elephant. So we have an opening next year. Okay, so then the work that I'm gonna talk here has been presented over the last year and a half in various conferences, and people like Sandeep and Babu have heard already a lot of it. So sorry for being repetitive. So the first paper is out this week or this month.
Alex, obviously I haven't heard enough.
You haven't heard enough. Okay. Yes. Okay. So let's see what this is. It is 14, 10. Oh no, 1411, this one is late. 1071. Okay. Yes. And there is actually 1412. Yeah, this. Okay. Anyway, so I am a warm up act for John, so that's what I'm trying my best here. So okay, so the idea is that there may be, or to discuss a possibility, a framework, that there may be a hidden sector. A lot of this motivation, or a lot of work, has been done in the context of dark matter physics, not by us, by many, many people. And we simply bring up, we point out that there is a natural and possible connection to neutrinos, in particular to the ice cube data that is coming. So the title is Neutrino Portal. So I have to try to explain what this is. So dark matter. So dark matter is a subject with hundreds and thousands of papers, so I will fail to cite 99.99% of them by necessity. But to outline the problem, so one issue, it's a perennial issue in this area, is whether cold dark matter describes the structure as we see or not. So there is the standard sort of paradigm of cold dark matter, which assumes that you have a wimp-like particle early on. It goes through thermal freeze-out. You have cold velocities, so they're, when they freeze out, the particles are, in the first approximation at rest, there are density fluctuations on different scales primordial fluctuations, these collapse. So small fluctuations become small halos, then these fall into larger halos. And so then you, when you, the structure is formed, you have a hierarchy of halos of different sizes. So you have a big halo, and then you have a sister halo here, a sister halo here. You could have some subhalos here. You could have these guys, they are falling toward the big guy. And then this whole system is going somewhere else, falling into some cluster. So this picture is very successful on large scales, as far as we can tell. But the debate has always been, is there an issue on small scales or not? So there are several manifestations of this debate. And again, some of these questions are two decades old. So one old problem is the problem of missing satellites. And this simply says that if you look at the galaxy like our own in simulations, there should be a lot of these little blobs with masses of 10 to the 9, 10 to the 8, 10 to the 7, and so on solar masses. And until recently, there was a dearth of small halos. Now, with Sloan, because with Sloan you could see a lot of very weak halos, or halos with only a few stars, the situation improved, and the battles rage on whether the problem is solved, alleviated, or not alleviated. But this has been a long-standing issue, and another issue is the cusp versus core problem. And this one also has to do with small-scale structure of dark matter. So according to Navarro, French, and White, the numerical simulations of cold dark matter give some kind of a universal profile for the halos. There is a power law, and then there is another power law in the center. So a halo looks kind of like this, 1 over some radius. And something like this, some rho naught for normalization. So this is the NFW profile, and it seemed to have the sort of magical universal property that halos in the simulation on different scales possess a certain universality. So it's 1 over R cubed on the outskirts, and then it's 1 over R inside. And the point is, what happens in the inside region? Because this is a cusp. It's a sharp feature in the center. The people who were doing observations, and have been doing and are doing to this day, have been arguing that perhaps this cusp in the center is not observed. And what is observed instead is a flat core, something like that. So what you do is you look at the galaxy, you look at the stars in the center of the galaxy, you look at their velocity dispersion, which tells you the amount of dark matter, which does the attraction. And it seems that the velocity dispersion is less than what would be predicted by this cusp. Okay, so there are several suggestions to solve this problem. One is to make the dark matter slightly warm, and another is to make it self-interacting. So I will talk about self-interacting. Warm, I'm not going to touch. I think we discussed this in this program at some level. So, okay, so the idea is, in both of these cases, in principle, you have issues with small blobs. So small blobs are not present, or they are not, or so the center of this halo is a region which is dense and cold. So when you have a cusp in the center, it means that you have some dark matter which is cold and so driving. So one way to do it is to make it warm, which means you have dark matter which is not at rest early on, so it free streams, so it washes out small features, so then we don't have this small scale structure in the end. And another way is to make dark matter self-interacting. So you have this cold component that sits in the center of your NFW profile, and then you have particles in the outer halo which are energetic. So they fly by, and the idea is if this guy scatters on some of these guys, then they are brought into thermal equilibrium, and you can evaporate the center, make it a core. So this is the basic idea of the self-interacting dark matter. So Spergel and Steinhardt. Were the first who discussed this in extensive detail, and they pointed out that you could evaporate the cusps, and maybe by interaction of satellites within the big halo, you could also evaporate some of these small satellites. So then the counter argument to this has been that there are small halos, but they are not lit up. There is no there are no stars in these halos because they were small. Star formation started early on. There was a supernova. The supernova was so powerful that it blew all the gas out, and that's why you don't see those halos, but in dark matter they are present. To which the counter argument, the most recent one, goes by a sexy name, Too Big to Fail. And this basically is an observation that for massive halos of about 10 to the 9 solar masses, a supernova is not powerful enough, a single supernova is not powerful enough to pick out all the gas. We see such halos around our galaxy, but cold dark matter simulations predict velocity dispersion at the center of about 30 kilometers per second. And we instead see less than 20 or 25 at most in the satellites, observed satellites of the Milky Way. So this idea goes to the Irvine group. So first paper, as far as I can tell, is this one. So there are literally hundreds of papers going back and forth about how severe these problems are. And you know, papers are being written, careers are being made, grants are being given, the world turns. So you know, it's fine. But still I think the discussion that there could be a self-interaction deserves some attention. And the idea at the very basic level is very general, that you can ask what type of cross-section you need in this system. So you know the dark matter density, you know the time for this particle to cross the outer particle to cross the center, you know typical velocities, you know everything by order of magnitude. And so the question is, what is the cross-section that you would like? And the cross-section that you would like is like this. It's 10 to the minus 24 centimeters squared, normalized to the GeV mass of dark matter. So, you know,
for elastic scattering?
For some scattering, elastic. So there is momentum exchange. That's all that that is being asked here. That there is momentum exchange, and these guys, which are cold and sitting here, they realize that they are surrounded by a thermal bath, and they evaporate out, and you get a core. So this is a large cross section.
Not necessarily related to the annihilation.
No. Although, of course, you know, then within the model, you have to discuss what exactly this means.
Right.
But, you know, the first approximation, you look at this and you say, weak interactions are 10 to the minus 36, let's say.
Yeah.
But this is much stronger. This smells of like strong interactions rather than weak interactions. And if you convert that to, if you take 10 to the minus 12 centimeters, this is huge, right? This
you
is 10 from
the map of the dark matter to be very light. Then
yes, then you go into the warm dark matter business, which I don't discuss for reasons of time. But yeah, here, you know, to make to have any hope and to finish in 10 minutes, I have to stick with this. So then this corresponds to like 20 mV or so. If you just take the conversion, so you're talking about. And this is a very naive statement. You just take the distance scale and you convert it to masses, then you are talking about 10 to the 1, 10 to the 2 MeVs just to get those interactions, which are not PCB type interactions. So it's not surprising that this is what you want. But the point is that this is a very large scale, and so the way to build any such models is to assume that there is a hidden sector. The hidden sector has a very weak coupling to our sector. And then within this framework, dark matter self-interacts.
That is an amazingly big cross-section.
It's a humongous cross-section.
Bigger than any nuclear resonance.
Right, but this is why, this is why the standard wing does not play anything. It's collisionless, the standard wing. If you ask what you need to have in these halos, you need huge cross-sections. So you need light mediators in all these models. Then the question is, you know, what parameter ranges are acceptable? And
this is a barn bridge.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So if you have 100 GeV, you have 100 barns. It's bigger than uranium.
Yeah, but so.
Which is about 10.
Yes.
But this is a dark cycle, so
anything. Well, in any case, yes. To put it in context.
Yeah.
Something the size of a penny or.
Yeah. No, so when people talk about self-interacting dark matter, they actually mean humongous process.
Humongous.
So that's what I want to say. So there is a natural meaning to a light mediator in this game, or a natural interest in light mediators.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can ask, you know, so you could ask a more detailed question. So you take a graph of, you know, the mass of dark matter, and then the mass and then the coupling, and then you say you take some mediator mass, so let me take 10 MeV. And the question is, what does this region look like? And it looks like this. The loud region makes some kind of a boomerang-shaped figure here. The change, the fact that it turns, is because you have different physical regimes. So here, you have what's called the Born approximation, or classical approximation. So here, you have alpha mx is less than the mediator mass. So the interaction is a delta function. The wavelength is very long. So you have the Born approximation here. The cross section here is actually more or less independent of velocity. You can compute it. So like it's, once you know it's a one photon exchange, then it's an undergraduate problem. You can compute it. And what you get in this limit, it's the first order independent of the velocity, and it goes like alpha x mx squared m phi to the fourth with some coefficient. And then up here, it's a different regime. So up here, the masses are very high. So then, you know, what happens is that...
What's the scale on your y-axis?
Very good. Yeah, so there is a GeV here, and there is 100 GeV here. And fortunately, I can use graphics to deal with that. So here you go. So this is the boomerang. There is 100 GeV where you make the transition between these regions. here you are in the perturbative regime, here the mass is big, so the momentum transfer is...
Once you have said light and matter,
yes.
Why don't you go completely light? Light and matter, which is what this is?
Yeah, so actually the question, so this is now, this becomes a model independent question. So you'd like to study dark matter masses. Here, it's from, you know, 10 MeV all the way up to 18. And you want to know which ranges of the mediator give you an interesting value. Actually, from this game, this is an interesting value, or this is an interesting value. So after you do the fits, and you do all the lines, you are actually pushed to GeV or below for dark matter. But it becomes, then it becomes a physics question, what values you prefer.
Okay, but it pushes...
Yeah, but it pushes you to where you would think is natural, that there is a light sector. Yes, yes, it's normal. So this part is normal. So you have this, so you have this shape, and then there are other curves. So I have to try to explain what these other curves are. So, okay, so the first is how this framework is coupled to neutrinos. So the suggestion was made several times actually, but most recently in this paper. In this paper, that if you somehow couple your dark matter to neutrinos, somehow, they don't go into details how you will do that, then you could solve all of these problems. And the way you would deal with missing satellites is, once your dark matter is also coupled to neutrinos, the neutrinos are like electromagnetic radiation for baryons. They prevent small things from collapsing. So small halos would not be collapsing, and you would delete structure on small scales, and then the self-interaction between dark matter particles would then wash out cusps and cores and solve the too big to fail problem. And at the end, everything is concordant and nice, all the problems are removed, and the price that you have to pay is that you have to couple this thing to it.
So the missing satellite problem, for example, do they have these quantitative constraints, or you just say we solve the missing satellite problem by...
So you can. So then, what you do is you say, suppose I couple two neutrinos. Now, first of all, I have to answer how I do that and stay sane, right? But let me postpone that for a minute. I couple two neutrinos. The neutrinos are creating sort of a cutoff scale in your power spectrum. Whatever is within the horizon while there is kinetic coupling between neutrinos and dark matter does not collapse.
No,
just like baryons.
No,
so then there are quantitative arguments of what is the halo cutoff mass, which are these bands, right? So the halo cutoff mass are, you know, they are here, and these are kind of interesting numbers. So 10 to the 7 is, you know, where you may worry, but we show the range.
So you cannot consider too heavy mediator mass, right? So if the mediator mass is too high, it's more difficult to solve the problem, right? Can you consider the heavy?
So there are two mediator masses here, right? So you can see that. So there are several things that happen here, and one is that this black curve moves this way. So now I have to explain what the black line is. So the black line is the population of dark matter that you get by doing a freeze-out calculation in this network. So you have neutrinos, they're coupled to dark matter with the new mediator, so they stay coupled longer than the standard limb. At some point they freeze out, and you don't want to produce an overabundance of dark matter. So anything to this side of this line is bad. In this direction, people usually tend not to talk about it, but it's too bad, because in this direction, you have too much annihilation, which is a good thing, because if you are thinking about asymmetric dark matter, which is, to me, is as well theoretically motivated as everything else, you can annihilate away your thermal, the symmetric component, and just have a normal population for other reasons. And if you are looking at this range here where dark matter is of order GeV, it is certainly reasonable for asymmetric dark matter. If you connect the genesis of dark matter and baryons, then these are the right kinds of numbers. So anyway, so the parameter space here is that in this way I don't want to be, because I introduce too much dark matter. In this way, I have too little symmetric component, but I can introduce asymmetric, so it's fine.
Do you have the parameter? Do you have a protocol when you change the beta mass?
Yes.
Okay.
We attempted to do a 3D surface. Only three people in the world could parse that plot. They're here. So then we gave up on that. So we studied mediator masses, and actually for IceCube we are interested in principle as a three parameter in the mediator mass. But yeah, so you can only show so much. Anyway,
I'm a little puzzled by that. The stronger coupling means, usually to me, bigger cross section.
Yes.
Bigger cross section means fewer surviving particles.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have thought.
Right. So this way you get less density after freeze out.
Ah.
So you say if you have a symmetric dark matter, you're okay.
Okay.
Here you have more of the symmetric component.
Yeah, yeah.
So this you are close to the universe. So that's that. Okay. So then the question is, how do you couple this to neutrinos and then and stay sane? So the way to couple it is sort of the most natural and easiest way, is you say there is a neutrino-like species within the dark sector. You don't want to write a contact interaction with the SU2 doublet. At least, it would be very hard, as they say in Japan. So instead, we just take the model with some other light species, and we say that it carries the hidden gauge number, the same one that is responsible for the dark matter interaction. And this gauge quantum number means that your dark matter is coupled to this component, and everything goes ahead.
So the black line is to get the dark matter density. And everything to the right of the black line gets you subdominant?
Yes. So everything to the right is okay?
It's okay, but it's not dark matter.
But you've got something else.
No, you just say that I generate my dark matter by an asymmetric process.
Okay.
So non-thermal freeze-out.
Right.
Yes. So then I have a model where I have a Lagrangian that has some gauge group in the hidden sector that couples to dark matter. So I call the dark photon phi, and then I write some other neutrino, a hidden neutrino. And this is where it gets onto our topic, the topic of our workshop. So then I put I do some Higgsing of this group, so it develops a verve. It develops a verve such that G times the verve is about 10 MeV perhaps, or 100 MeV. And then I have an interaction between these hidden neutrinos. My colleagues like secluded neutrinos, so these are secluded neutrinos. And then between dark matter, and then between dark matter and neutrinos. So very generally, this is a framework. And then the last bit is how does this couple to the standard model? So the way this couples to the standard model is through a Weinberg operator. So you have LH in the standard model, and here you write the Higgs verb. So you write the Higgs, hidden Higgs, times this field. So for simplicity, we say that there is some U1, but obviously we don't know what this group is, but when we don't know, we could start by saying it's a U1. So you can write this. So this is a standard model singlet. This is a hidden sector singlet. You can write this operator. This is like the mass, only instead of, you know, putting down this the other term that we are used to, you put down the hidden sector mass. So this is L portal. Why portal? Because this is how your standard model fields know about this. An explicit realization of this is trivial, right? You just introduce some right-handed field, which is a singlet under both. You have a normalizable interaction with the Dirac masses and the Majorana mass for the right-handed field. You integrate out the right-handed field, you get this in the standard way that you always get Majorana masses.
But wouldn't you also create a neutrino mass term then if you have like a SU2 singlet mediator? SU2, yeah. Because you have like, if you look about this operator, it's a dimension 6 operator.
Dimension 5. Dimension 5. This is very important.
You would like cut it in the middle, then you could also produce LH somehow.
Good luck with that, because the scales here could be 10 to the 10 GeV. So this is the important point. I mean, dimension 5 operators are precious because they allow you to look very far, right? So this one could be, these two sectors, ours and the hidden sector, could be connected by something that lives at 10 to the 9 or 10 to the 10 GeV. And there could be other higher dimensional operators, but they will be suppressed by lambda squared. And,
but this will be still good for neutrino mass.
So this is the property of the neutrino mass, right? Yeah. So if your neutrino mass is generated at the seesaw scale, which is high up, then you can look for other manifestations of this physics until you're blue in the face, right? There is no, and this is sort of, dimension 5 operators are, in that case, they win. But I mean, here, if you want to think about the explicit model, this is a seesaw.
Right.
Now, this is just a seesaw with a very high scale, mm-hmm. and you couple these sectors, and it's completely natural mm-hmm. in this way. Right? There is no, so this introduces mixing between the active neutrino and the sterile neutrino, which is not sterile, it's charged under a hidden gauge. This idea, so this framework is not new, it's not ours. People have talked about it actually many times. So Pospelov, Maxim Pospelov, had a very brave model where he did this kind of thing, but he wanted the hidden neutrino to be gauged under the baryon number, because he wanted to explain Dama. So I don't want to explain Dama. I don't want to gauge baryon number or anything, but it's sort of the most natural or the cheapest way that you have to connect a hidden sector gauge group to us is with the neutrino portal. Okay, there are two other portals, right? So once you have this U1, you could have a kinetic mixing with hypercharge. So you have FF, you have F sterile F hypercharge. And this is standard, and you can have a Higgs portal. Which what that is a way of saying that you have H squared, and then you have this Higgs squared. And this is another normalizable operator. So if there is a coupling like this, then all the dark photon searches are in business looking for this. This is in the LHC business. People are very happy if you tell them that the Higgs has these wonderful properties. But if you don't have these properties, if your connection to the hidden sector is still something like this, then this becomes kind of diabolical. It's very hard to probe.
Is that
so
the neutrino Dirac hybrid?
So this one is by construction that I described is Majorana. So I have. It's a left-handed field, and the right-handed singlet was given a big mass to do a seesaw. Right? So this is, in many ways, this is like our neutrino, just because it's own neutrino.
But if you have a light mediator.
Yes.
So the mass of the sterile or new sterile.
Yes.
Should be of the order of the light mediator mass.
So you have the Dirac term for it. And you have the heavy right-handed mass, as you normally do, which is why you have to explain why it's love in the end. So it comes out like the standard CISO argument. Yeah, so that's the argument, right? So if you just write the Dirac mass for it, then you would expect it to be, unless you're in Kappa, it's 10 to the minus 14, you would expect it to be of 10 MeV.
Yeah, I don't see the light mediator coming from the structure. Because you have a U1 here.
So this structure is already, I already integrated out the right hand.
But you also gave a large mass to the photon of the heavy.
Through the breaking of the gate.
The Majorana mass of the yeah.
No, the Majorana mass is something else, right? I just wrote some term at a very high scale.
No, but your right-handed U1 is charged, right?
Right-handed U1 is not charged. The same.
It's not the newest couples to the IU, so you charge.
So this is what left-handed guy is charged.
Oh,
that is correct. Then, if you want to get this out of some model, you could write a single Majorana mask and then integrate it out, which I did to get this this thing. Yes, right. So So it's good to have postdocs. They're very good about these worlds.
We need a definition of steroid.
Yeah. Well, so here, if you do this experiment. And you do this for small, you know, for small baseline, it would be a sterile neutrino. You have an oscillation here, it disappears, you don't measure it unless you have something like this, which gives you an insight that it's a separate talk. But if you just, you know, oscillate into this hidden thing, then that's it. In the universe, for ice cube, it's the other way around. It's the sterile component that provides all the interactions. So now I have this framework where I have three normal active neutrinos with some admixture of this secluded neutrino, which has a hidden interaction. So I would like to constrain.
You said in the baseline experiments you could oscillate into this secluded neutrino.
Right. Let's say.
So it has a mass of order, an electron volt.
Yeah, you can do what you want.
And then what happens to it in the early universe?
Well, that's, yes, very good. I have,
finish within the next 5 minutes.
I have
minutes
to finish within the next 5 minutes. So there are questions that you have to ask. What happens to this in the early universe? Do you produce it in such a way that there is an appreciable relative population? And do ultra-high energy neutrinos, when they go through the universe, scatter on it? So the answer is, the production is okay. It's a very interesting question, but it is okay.
Okay meaning suppressed.
Okay means that it's there, but you don't violate anything too much. And the key to that, so there were two papers, and one was by Hanistad, Hansen, and Tran, and the other one was by Dice, Gupta, and Kopp. They were both last October. Mm. They were very good for us. We love them. Love these guys. What they pointed out is that if you have a sea of some kind of background density of these secluded neutrinos, and they have an interaction, then the mixing angle of these guys to ours will be suppressed by the medium induced potential. So they take the old idea of Raffelt and Mozold and apply it. Because the masses are less, all the potentials are bigger. So then there is a separation. Once there is some kind of background component, there is a separation between that component and our neutrinos. So what they show is for 10 MeV, the mixing is so small that the secluded sector is decoupled from our sector during the time when you can make neutrinos. So up to 10 MeV, let's say. And actually up to dBm, they are decoupled. So dBm is okay. Up to dBm, if you have a small primordial component, it doesn't get transferred from the active neutrinos. Then the thing that for some reason they did not discuss, but they should have, is that after dBm, it happens that this suppression is removed.
Yeah.
And then they didn't discuss it for reasons that baffled us, but so did it. So then when it's removed, some of your neutrinos get transferred into this state. And now some of your relic population in the universe, you think it's made of three normal neutrinos, but there is some of it which is in this secluded component. Then you shoot ultra high energy neutrinos through this background, and there is an interaction.
This latter thing happens when?
The one you shoot the neutrino, or?
No. Oh, when in the early universe does this neutrino matter suppression disappear? So
say 100 keV. According to their
So thoughts. Prior to recombination.
Yeah. Prior to recombination. So let me show you this. So this is straight from their paper. So they have the suppression potential in black for different mediator masses. And this, which is the vacuum potential as a guide. So when this is much bigger than this, you have a suppression. And here, you have no suppression. So 10 to the 5, the suppression is removed in this model.
Nothing concludes there, because I think we have like 1 minute of the music.
I'm
just getting started, so he'll have to drag me out. It will be very difficult.
No, you can scroll down. And
he's welcome to take my time if you want.
It doesn't matter. So what I want to say is that. So now what?
Yes.
Okay. The beauty is that I can type between this and that. Okay. So the interaction, this new interaction into the normal neutrino sector comes about because of this admixture, which actually means that if you take bounds on neutrino interactions, between neutrino interactions, which have been in the game since the early 70s, actually, people were arguing whether there is, starting with Ponte Corvo, people were speculating maybe there is a neutrino-neutrino interaction. It turns out that none of those bounds apply even in principle, because what you produce in colliders or in kaon decays are flavor states, this is very important, which behave normally until you go some distance away and you have oscillations. So when you have oscillations, when the oscillations have taken place, your mass eigenstates inherit this new interaction. But flavor states don't. So if you do an experiment at LEP, whatever you do doesn't know anything about this physics.
But what happens to the CMB?
Yeah, so what happens in the CMB is, so CMB is a consideration, and there is a literature to that effect, actually. Some of it is even by yours truly, the idea is that for CMB, you get most sensitivity where your mediators are of order in EV. Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, right? You want to probe that scale. Mm-hmm. For 10 MeV, you need a process where your center of mass energy is 10 MeV. So if I take a PEV and 0.1 EV, which is the mass scale of my neutrinos, and I do a geometric mean, I get 10 MeV, which is that scale which is interesting for dark matter, which is why this game sort of makes some sense, no? There is sort of a very natural, if you have a mediator in the ballpark of 10, 100 MeV, it is expected to have a large impact at ice cube. So then you can have a zoom. There's a person standing here, you understand? if you take ice cube, then there is a zoo of options. So you could have absorption bands, and I'm concluding.
This is like Z-dips.
It's exactly like Z-dips. Exactly like Z-dips. So, right. So, if you look at the papers by Tom and company from 10 years ago, it's like Z-dips, only there you have 10 to the 22 EV. Here, because the mediator is light, it's in the game of ice cube. Right. So, you could have dips from the S resonance. Many people study this, so this is absolutely boring. It's just a straightforward statement. You could have, if your light state is relativistic, you could eat something here over a range of energies. So if you don't like your AGM flux at 10 to the 18 GeV, you can eat it out. If you would like to eliminate what you would like to eliminate, Glashow neutrinos, you put one of the dips there and it takes care of that. If you want the gap, then the size of the gap, the size of the gap is very natural, right? Because all it is, it's a statement of your cosmological distribution. So if your sources are at the redshift of several, you have absorption, and you sweep that range over a factor of 2 or 3. I'm on the same office, I'm immune.
Can you assume?
Anyway, so the bottom line is, for ice cube, there is a lot of interesting phenomenology. One possible manifestation is, okay, so you can start by putting a constraint. If your absorption is too much, then you don't get fluxes from your objects at cosmological distances. So if you put a cutoff at 10 MeV, that's 10 megaparsec, that's going to get it's already problematic, it's going to get even more problematic. So people wrote papers to that effect. That's kind of a general consideration. So if you put it on this plot, you can eat this part of the parameter space, which people actually liked. People thought it was here. You can eat it out by saying there is too much absorption.
Do you really mean that I have to unplug it?
It's fine if you unplug it.
Because I mean, they are really like now.
So then the interesting range is here.
And also
John is relaxed. Look, he is wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
If he wants to talk the whole time, it's fine with me. Then I don't have to talk.
Yes. No, I'm basically done.
So that actually mentioned the fact that the dips may be in showers or in tracks. There's lots of
right. So there is also a spectrum of possibilities, which some dips said, so your framework is not predictive. I say it leads to diverse predictions.
A lot of freedom, yeah.
Yes. So,
everything.
Power up.
It's a better.
Yeah.
There's no flavor structure here.
So you could get flavor structure if you want.
No, but you
can. So here we don't discuss it, but you could get flavor structure.
Sure, yeah. But it would be in general.
You could do whatever you like.
No, so if you mix with one of the states, for example, right? Mm-hmm. With one of the states, let's say nu 3, which has very little nu e, then you upset your flavor ratio by letting more nu e than the other ones.
No, but I think depending on the observation, you can change your.
If you don't like the glacial resonance, you eat that. So So there is a menu, and I provoke my German colleague here. So. there is no.
Yes, I know.
I know. Sorry about this. No, John is coming next. So there is this framework.
Maybe.
Yes, there is this framework, and the framework has many things that people can study. So I hope that in the future.
So the thing is, he's not focusing it. So
in your calculation, the mediator also depends on neutrino, right?
Sorry, what?
Mediator. Sorry.
No, very good. Oh, I want to talk. I have an excuse to talk about that.
Okay.
We discussed that offline.
Let's thank Alexander again.